I'll be reading from Matthew chapter 12, verse 46, which states, "While Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, 'Your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you.' He replied to him, 'Who is my mother and who are my brothers?' Pointing to his disciples, he said, 'Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother.'"
That's good. Hey, that interview was awesome. Can we just give a round for Stu? Appreciate that, mate. I love that. Hey, we're doing something a little bit different tonight at the end of the service, just a shout out. So Brody and a couple of people will be down the front here. If you want prayer, that's just an excellent way to express our community, is to pray to God together. We'll do that in the service in a minute when Jazz comes up. But right at the end, if you want people to pray for you and with you about something good in your life, something bad in your life, something different in your life, just roll down the front and those people would love to do that with you. We're going to talk about community tonight. And am I right in saying that ever since COVID or just before, my newsfeed has been full of stories about loneliness? Maybe the algorithm has realized I'm a bit lonely, I don't know. But it's full of loneliness stories. This ABC article got released in May. It's saying, fascinatingly for us in this room, 18 to 24-year-olds and 45 to 54-year-olds are the most likely Aussies to report feeling lonely. But I reckon that if we ask people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever, have you experienced loneliness recently? Do you know that dark feeling? Do you know that heavy feeling? Do you know that dull feeling? Even in this year, I reckon our rates of reporting would be pretty high. And in response, it's only natural to cry out for community. We say, I don't just want to live in as myself in this world. I want to be meaningfully connected to other people. I realize that my individualistic, atomistic is not everything that there is, and actually life is most fully lived in relationship with others. So tonight, we're talking about the real stuff. We're talking about our pursuit of community. Can I begin with a question for you? Here it is. What are your expectations when it comes to church community? How high, how low? What are your expectations of church community? Can we open our Bibles to Genesis 1? If you've got a Bible, Genesis 1, it'll come up on the screen. We get this incredible basis for community right on the very first page of the Bible. Genesis 1:27, it says, "So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them." How does that help with community? It changes the way you relate to every person you ever meet. It changes the way you relate to every person you ever meet. Because the person sitting next to you is now born in the image and likeness of God. As a result, they're worthy of your respect and your dignity, even when they haven't earned it. They are inherently valuable. This changes the way that we relate to each other, whether you're catching the train into work or uni and the person sitting next to you is a little bit annoying. They are an image bearer of God. This changes our baseline approach to other people, and it's definitely going to upgrade our approach to community, isn't it? And how about this? You know that community actually begins before the first verse of the Bible? Because as you read the rest of the Bible, you realize that God is actually a Godhead, that there is one God, three persons, that the doctrine of the Trinity means that before there was creation, there was community. And I reckon that our pursuit of community is going to be helped when we reflect on the Trinity. Trinity is just a compound word. It's just tri-unity mashed together. And I think that understanding the tri-unity is going to help us with our understanding of community, right? Because the Father is in great relationship with the Son. The Son is in great relationship with the Spirit. Is humanity the overflow of God's loneliness? No. If anything, humanity is the overflow of a high-functioning community within the Godhead. So think about it like this. we're given the ultimate grounding for what great community could look like because everyone's made in the image of God, and we recognize that my existence itself is the result of community within the Godhead and the overflow of community. It sets us up to actually have a bit of optimism about community. We can have high expectations about what community within the Christian church could look like. And at the same time, the Bible leads us to a high degree of realism because the Bible doesn't finish at Genesis 1. The storyline is that God creates a little mini community, Adam and Eve, but what they do is unite against God. They get kicked out of the garden. And so Genesis chapter 4, this will come up on the screen as well. Genesis chapter 4, you see the ultimate act of non-community straight out of the gates as soon as they get kicked out of the garden because Cain murders his brother Abel. The Bible begins with a garden. It's a good spot to be. The Bible ends with the new heavens and the new earth. It's a good spot to be. We live in neither. We live in what would be called a fallen world surrounded by other fallen people. And this means that on the one hand, we have a high degree of optimism about what church community could be. And on the other hand, we have a high degree of realism about what it's actually going to feel like day today. I was talking to our senior minister, Nigel, in preparation for today, and I've taken these two helpful quotes. We can pull them up on the screen about your expectations of community. He says, "Beware seeking perfection from an imperfect collection of people." Number two, expect community to be hard and work at it being excellent. I think that's a really good mix of optimism and realism. We're talking about church community today. And we call this talk a vision for community, which is a little bit lofty. It's a little bit too big. What I really want to do is just take you from left to right through the Bible, looking through the lens of community. We love community. We want community. I want to say today that when you look through the Bible according to the theme of community, you realize that God likes it even more than we do. The whole theme of the Bible, the whole thread of the Bible, when you look for it, is to recognize that God has been building a community from Genesis to Revelation. Now, we've got this overly complicated, horrific diagram coming up on the screen. I'm going to take you through it for the next 10 minutes or so. We're going to stay on this slide. I'm going to walk you through the Bible according to the theme of community. Can I get a thumbs up if that sounds like an okay use of the next 10 minutes? Genesis chapter 12 is where we get the promise of community. It's when God promises to Abraham and to Sarah, I'm going to build a community through you. You are the starting point of God's community. And so he says, I will make you into a great nation. Now, can you just bank that word great? We're going to come back to it. I'm not going to build a small nation. I'm going to build a great nation out of the line of Abraham and Sarah. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you. And so this little community does start to multiply and does start to grow. The drama is that by the book of Exodus, they are an enslaved community under Pharaoh, but God rescues them. They gather at the base of Mount Sinai and they become a rescued community. They get given some instructions about how they're meant to be different from the surrounding nations. You get to the book of Leviticus, for example, and there's a lot of chat about how they're supposed to be holy as I am holy. What that means is they're supposed to be a different kind of community. And if you're taking some youth on a winter camp in the next couple of weeks, you're going to be studying the book of Leviticus a little bit more deeply. Now, as you keep coming, you get to the books of Joshua, you get to Judges, 1-2 Samuel, 1-2 Kings. They're all about leadership within God's community, and leadership is done differently within God's community. We're in the middle of the Bible now. You get to the book of Psalms, which is basically the community's songbook, because faith was never meant to be just me and God. It was meant to be us and God. And so God equips his people with a shared common songbook for expressing that. This goes a little way to explaining why we do sing in church, even if the 36-year-old white blokes didn't like it at first. I'm 34. So Proverbs is basically community living. It's like we're going to live near each other. How's that going to work out? We need wisdom for how to live in community with each other. Now, the drama of the second half of the Old Testament is that God's community gets scattered. What you want is your community to be all in the same place at the same time, gathering around the same thing. But because they weren't functioning well as a community in God's way, he scatters them, but then out of his grace, he does regather them. That's books like Ezra and Nehemiah. And if we pause at just this point, there is a tension in what we've said so far. There is something that makes me feel uncomfortable as a modern person. It's this. How is it that God's community was just limited to people who were genetically descended from one particular family? That makes me feel kind of weird. But here's the thing. You get the idea the whole way through the Old Testament and a couple of peaks, a couple of sneak peek moments, that that's not always going to be the case. It was just the starting point. And so the book of Ruth, for example, if you know it, there's a Moabite who gets included in the community of God, even though she's from outside the line of Abraham. The book of Isaiah, for example, has a bit of chat about being a light to the Gentiles. Gentiles, just anyone outside of Abraham's line. And so there's always been an idea that the community one day would be expanded to include both Jews and Gentiles, and when Jesus shows up, he makes it explicit. So if you come to John chapter 10 with me, if you've got that flick upable, I am the good shepherd. I have other sheep, verse 16, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. What he's talking about is that he already has some sheep, those genetically descended from Abraham, and he's planning to expand the community of God to other sheep who will listen to his voice. You and I are part of the fulfillment of what Jesus said right here. And so the rest of the New Testament, in one sense, is just the playing out of the implications of the ingathering of the Gentiles into the expanded community of God. And in Acts, they get themselves really confused because they think, well, are the Gentiles supposed to follow the Old Testament law? How does all of this work? But they kind of muddle through it with some counsels. And the rest of the New Testament is a bunch of letters to these new localized Christian communities, you just call that a church, trying to express what is it meant to look like to express this community that you've been built into. And that's where you get the one another commands, the one another, like care for one another, pray for one another, welcome one another as you have been welcomed. And depending on how you count it, there's somewhere between 50 and 100 one another commands in the New Testament. Jared's actually going to focus on those for us next week. A couple of weeks ago, we voted on which ones we wanted to be talked about next week, and Jared's going to do exactly that. Can we finish our roll through the Bible according to the theme of community in Revelation chapter 7? This gives us the picture of how it all ends. And when you know how it ends, you know how to live in light of it right now. Here's how it all ends. Revelation 7, God's end time community. After this I looked, verse 9, and there before me was a great multitude. Did I get you to bank that word great right the way back in Genesis chapter 12? The promise to Abraham was that I'll make you into a great nation. The fulfillment of all of that, which is yet to come for us in Revelation 7, is that there is a great multitude gathered. We'll come back to that in just a bit. And one of the things to notice about it is this is multilingual, multi-ethnic, multi-everything, right? It says there was a great multitude that no one could count from every nation, tribe, people, and language standing before the throne and before the Lamb. And what they're doing is they're praising God. Verse 10, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. This is just a helpful thing to recognize. The community of God is a worshiping community. It's a community built around and centered upon the worship of God and particularly of Jesus, our Savior. Here's why that matters. Sometimes we get so excited about community that community becomes the center of our community. And we say, you want community, I want community, let's have community, let's make community the center of our community. But the problem is, if you get five lonely people, put them in a room together, walk away, come back 2 days later, are you going to find high-functioning community? You have to base your community around something meaningful. I want to suggest that the most meaningful thing you can center your community around is the worship of the God who made us and saved us. You have to have a basis for your community. And so what we are here is a worshiping community that has to be the center always. And so there's the end of our run through from Genesis to Revelation. How are you feeling? I talked a bit too fast. Sorry about that. From one angle, we can say God is more on about community than we are. He has been building a community ever since Genesis 12, and he's going to keep doing that until he gets to Revelation chapter 7. And so, with all of that as run-up, we've talked about optimism and realism in community. We've talked about the thread of community the whole way through the scriptures. I just want to do something a little bit more manageable now, a little bit more simple. I want to launch some new language with you. I want to experiment with some new language, a vision for community. I wonder if an excellent community would be one in which everyone was needed and known. Needed and known. Now, you get those two ideas from two images of the Bible, particularly 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and then we'll come to the one that Stu read, Matthew 12, a bit later. So if you've got 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it'll come up on the screen as well. Pay attention to the idea of needed, needed and known. As it is, there are many parts but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. This is such an important understanding of what church really is, that there's actually like a small group of people from here who participate in a bigger group called one body, where they literally get together to try and express this in a particular way. We are one body. That's what it means to be a community. And I like this image, right? Because you and I, we both live in bodies every day. We understand how they work, right? We realize I don't need 10 hands, I only need two. And I need a bunch of other bits of my body that I don't even realize exist until they start hurting. I need diversity within my body. I don't need everything to be replicas of the other parts. I need lots of little bits doing lots of little things. The magic of the whole thing is when it all comes together in this interconnected kind of way. This is the idea of what does a community look like? A community is one in which everyone is needed and everyone is known. Can we talk a little bit more about this idea of being needed for just a second? Because you've got to really think about it. Sometimes, and I think this happened on the second week that I was back at this church. So 2.5 years ago when I came back to this church, somebody sat next to me and they said, oh, I kind of like what's happening at Christchurch. I don't really feel like I know what my place is. I don't really feel needed. I thought, on the one hand, that's a beautiful sentiment because it's about being a contributor and not just a consumer. I love that. On the other hand, you've got to really think about what does it mean to be needed? Am I needed? Now, some people's conception of needed is very limited. It's limited to the platform or to formal serving roles. And you say, gee, there are a lot of people up on the band before. It doesn't look like I'm needed in the band. You could say, there's enough people on the AV desk today. It doesn't look like they need me. Am I needed in this church? And if your understanding of being needed is limited to like putting on a church service, then you could make an argument either way. But here's the thing, being needed is so much bigger than that. Particularly, one of the most helpful ways to think about being needed is to tune in to the one another commands, which Jared is going to focus on next week. Think about it like this. The person in front of you might need somebody to pray with them after the service. Pray for one another. The person sitting behind you might need somebody to rejoice with them at something wonderful that's happened this week. Rejoice with one another. The person sitting three across from you to the right might be kind of new and they need somebody to welcome them. Welcome one another as Jesus has welcomed you. When you tune in to how broad the connections between the people in the church is meant to be, when you tune in to the one another command, you go, oh, I've got a lot of work to do on a Sunday, even when I'm not like formally scheduled on any particular serving role. I'm needed here because I have a role to play with the other people around me. Church is not only about the vertical. Church is not only about what happens up here. Church is very significantly also about what happens in the cluster of people sitting directly around you. I want to say today that you are needed in church, even when you don't have a formal serving role for that day. Experimental language, needed and known, needed and known. So that language of needed is about the body. Can we talk about the language of being known by talking about the idea of family? Church is meant to be a family. Genesis chapter 4, where we were before. This is the continued version. So Cain murders his brother Abel, and then he says, am I my brother's keeper? God says, where's your brother? He says, no, I'm not my brother's keeper. I have no responsibility towards that man. A little bit about me. I'll give you a little bit of a mental break. When I was during COVID, I was living in Botany, which for those of you thinking about buying real estate in the future is a good way to buy close to Maroubra without paying Maroubra prices, right? So you get a little apartment in Botany, and then they say 5K radius. Do you remember the 5K radius? We looked it up and we said, ooh, you know what's 4.9 kilometres from our apartment? Maroubra Beach. This has gone very well. So lunch breaks during work, during COVID, I spent a lot of time just surfing at North Maroubra Beach. If you are a surfer, you know that there's a couple of tribal beaches still left in Sydney. One of them's North Narrabeen, hectic place. One of them is North Maroubra. It's what's Maroubra famous for? The Bra Boys. This was mostly over this side. So if you're unfamiliar with the Bra Boys, they were a gang. They're actually pretty crusty now. A bunch of them have ended up in jail. A bunch of them are too old to surf. A bunch of them were still around. And they love to let you know that they are the Bra Boys. Here's how they do it. It's cold in winter. We're all wearing wetsuits. They paddle out in their board shorts because they want you to see the tattoo around their collarbone. Do you know what it says? My brother's keeper. And you go, that's fascinating, that this gang have taken as the basis of their community the idea of being family. And to say, I do have responsibility for the other people in my family. Now, lots of the people at 10:45 this morning got confused. They're saying, are you saying that we should commit violent crimes? I said, come on, guys. But the point here is the Bra Boys are kind of onto something. And if church could be more onto this idea of family, I think we'd take a couple of steps forward. Can I show it to you in Jesus' language, which is what Stu read for us before, Matthew chapter 12. A bunch of people are looking for him. And they say, someone told him, your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you. He replied to him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And pointing to his disciples, he said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Get this, the crowning achievement of Jesus' ministry is his death on the cross, right? If you're kind of new, you're thinking about the whole Jesus thing, the death of Jesus on the cross is the place to focus your investigations because that is where he dies on the cross for our sins, in our place as our substitute. And your eternal destiny hangs on how you respond to what he did on the cross. Now get this, in that moment that he's hanging on the cross, he's also thinking about community. John chapter 19, it'll come up on the screen. He's literally hanging on the cross at this moment. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, woman, here's your son. And to the disciple, here's your mum. He's taking non-biologically related people and making them family. Here's how it works. By nature and by choice, all of us are like the original mini community, Adam and Eve. We get ourselves kicked out of the garden. We break relationship with our father. But Jesus' death takes the penalty for all of our sin so that we can live in restored relationship vertically to the Father, and that influences our horizontal relationships. Because if you call God Dad and I call God Dad, we have the same dad that makes us family. In the previous passage, if you call Jesus brother and I call Jesus brother, we have the same brother and we are family. What I want to say today is that a great church community would be one in which everyone realized they were needed and in which everyone was known like a family. Now, we've got to interrogate that idea of family just a bit because sometimes people underplay it and sometimes people overplay it. I'll tell you a little funny story. My daughter Ava, she's two, and she's grappling with words and concepts. She's kind of halfway there, and she started saying this thing to me just as I'm about to walk out the door to work. She'll say, "No, Dada, don't go work. I want us to be family." And this is why I'm late to every meeting, right? You can see that she's so close, but she's just slightly missed what family actually means. We also miss in church life in one classic common way. We miss on family when we insist on church family meaning small. If you insist on church family meaning small, you've slightly missed. I'll show you a picture of a family, right? This is a family. It's got a couple of people. They probably all live under the same roof. Can I show you another picture of a family? This is a family. A couple of moments to digest that. When you insist on making church a small family, haven't you missed the whole idea of the great nation that was promised to Abraham back in Genesis 12, that's fulfilled by Jesus, the son of Abraham, and ultimately gets all the way to Revelation 7, where there is not just a small multitude, but a great multitude. You have brothers and sisters in Christ in Mongolia, Greenland, and Patagonia, who you have never met and you will never meet until that final day. The family of God is a broad thing. And we've got to be careful about saying that family has to mean small, because I think in that moment we've stepped outside of God's plan to build a massive global family with our brother Jesus and God as our Father. Now, at the same time, you can also underplay family and you can miss. We miss when we just forget that this is not a performance, this is not a show, this is a community, specifically this is a family. And when someone enters into our family gathering on a Sunday, they ought to feel known. Now, if there's 10 people at a family gathering, it's pretty easy for everyone to feel known. Sociologists have picked up the number of 150 or so, and they've said that's the number where it's pretty much impossible to know everyone else by name. And at the same time, if we're leaning into the idea of family, you've got to say, well, everyone still has to be known, even if I don't know everyone. I don't know everyone's name, but everyone has to be known. That's what it means to be a family. I want us to be a community where everyone is needed and everyone is known. Let's move towards a close on this. There's a couple of arrows coming out of needed and known. I reckon a great church community, especially here for 6 p.m., would be one in which we show up each week, not just looking to get my kind of spiritual fix, to get moved by the songs, to get some kind of helpful thing from the sermon and then to leave, but actually tuned into the people around me. Because you have a job every Sunday. You are needed. We need you, and the people around you need you to one another, each other. And Jared will explore that a little bit more next week. In terms of being known, I need this to be a place where everyone is known. And so if you're kind of new, you could do something small to help us get to know you. That would be to make yourself known. Please don't hide. We'd love to get to know you. In a group like this, it helps us if you could make yourself known. One of the best ways to do that is to introduce yourself to someone. One of the best ways to do that is to show up at Bonfire Night. One of the best ways to do that is to stick around, eat some food, get to know some people. Another big ticket way to make yourself known is to join a growth group and then also to show up to it, because that is the place where people will actually get around you. That is the place where people will know your name. They'll ask how you're going. They'll remember what you said last week and ask the follow-up. Please do make yourself known. Bigger thing to say to you, if you are here and you feel very comfy that you're here, this feels like a pretty regular place, you've been here for a couple of years, I want to say today, get to know others. Make your Sunday not just about you and your relationship with God. Make it about the other people around you. We've been trying to bulk up the welcoming team recently because that's really important. But even if we bulk it up, there's still going to be people who don't get welcomed on the way in. The welcoming team, in the broader sense, needs to be all of us. Because it is such a tragedy when someone crosses the pain line, walks all the way into church for the first time, like you heard Stu's story, just kind of showed up on his own. If Stu was to walk in here and for just nobody to talk to him that day because we were all so interested in the person we came with, that we totally miss the person who's boldly stepped in among us. The welcoming team has to be all of us, and we'll keep bulking up the kind of more formal welcoming team at the same time. I want to say today that a great community would be one in which all of us are needed and all of us are known.